This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Do you think we need more blood?
Our head looks good, but maybe more on the neck?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe we should spray a couple more right there on the neck and on the shirt.
That sounds good.
Can't have too much blood.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 18 years, Liz.
That's me, Liz Craft. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
Today, we're going to talk about all the things we are not doing these days, all the ways our lives have fallen apart since our pilot got picked up.
Oh, so many ways. And we're also going to debut a new segment called Name That Hollywood Job. There are so many jobs here that just don't exist in other industries, and our friend Sherry Carnes has one of them. Sherry's going to come by and tell us what the heck a story analyst is.
Yes. And we also have a lucky Hollywood hack, courtesy of our director, Larissa Kondracki. But first, we want to share an extremely gratifying email we got from a listener named Natalie. So Natalie wrote in response to episodes 39 and 42, where we talked about / urged people to freeze their eggs. She wrote, "Last fall, I listened to your episode about egg freezing, and as a 34-year-old woman, it got me thinking. My job keeps me extremely busy, but after hearing that episode, I decided to make some appointments with my gynecologist and eventually a fertility specialist to learn a little bit more about the process. After going over my test results in mid-December, they both suggested I go ahead with the procedure and that I should start sometime in the next 6 months, i.e. before turning 35. As you know, fertility preservation cycles are tied to your period, so when I got mine the day before New Year's Eve, I was not thrilled. I wanted to go out and ring in the new year, not inject myself with needles alone in my apartment. I knew I could just wait a month or two or three or four to start my freezing cycle, but something, the universe, told me to just get over it, so I went ahead and began the process the next day. Just 6 days later, completely out of the blue, I was contacted about a job in another city. It was a huge promotion and something I never, ever thought I would be approached for, and I certainly hadn't considered leaving New York City, my home of 10 years. Over the next several days, hopped up on hormone medications, remember? I thought about it and increasingly realized the job was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So just 4 days after my retrieval surgery, I got on a train and met with the people who wanted to hire me, and a few days after that, I ended up taking the job. The one thing I keep thinking about is if I hadn't frozen my eggs on that very first opportunity, I never, ever would have done it. Between the new job and moving to a new city, life would have gotten too hectic, and I'm sure I wouldn't have had the bandwidth to deal with such an overwhelming emotional medical process on top of all the other changes that were suddenly upon me. All of that is to say, I'm so glad I did it when I did it, and I like knowing that a little piece of me, several of them actually, are holding down the fort in NYC while I take on this new challenge."
Well, Natalie, three cheers.
Yay, Natalie.
Yay. We love hearing about people freezing their eggs.
We really do.
Because I really wish I'd frozen my eggs, although I think back then you couldn't, but I wish I'd frozen some embryos.
Yes. And we talked about cosmic timing in episode 42. Mm-hmm. This is like a prime example of that.
It really is.
Yes. So well done.
Yes. And we think you should name your future children Liz and Sarah.
Yes. Maybe Elizabeth Sarah or Sarah Elizabeth.
Oh, there you go.
In
whatever
order. Combine
the two. Yeah. Elizabeth Sarah.
Sarah Elizabeth.
Okay. Thanks, Natalie.
All right. First up is our segment from the treadmill desks of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches this week. And this week, it's all the things we're not doing.
That we should be doing, that we usually do, and that we have completely abandoned since our pilot got ordered.
It's ugly.
It is. Exercising.
Not
doing
it. Hasn't
happened.
No.
I haven't done Inform Fitness in weeks.
Me neither.
I basically just texted Ann, my trainer, and said, I'm out.
I did 12 minutes on my bicycle one morning.
Oh, well, that's good.
But that's in like the last month and a half.
Yeah.
It's
we were
horrible.
Even in our Disney office. Usually during the pilot, we're at Paramount, but we were, it's over the weekend, we were at our Disney office working on the script where we have our treadmill desks, and I just couldn't even bring myself to get on it.
No.
I was just like, I can't leave this chair.
Marsha got on mine for a little while.
Yeah, she did. She, you know, Marsha keeps it going, but
yeah.
You and I, not so much.
All right. Something else we're not doing, I'm not doing, is flossing.
I'm flossing a tiny bit.
I am not flossing. And it sucks because I had like, you know, I've never been a good flosser and I had finally gotten into a really good flossing routine for like a year. Out the window.
Out the window.
Sucks.
We are not taking our kids to school. That's sad.
It's so sad.
But at least we get to see them, glimpses of them.
Yeah.
Which we wouldn't be able to do if we weren't in LA.
And when the rare times when I do get to take Violet to school, I definitely savor it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. We're also not putting our kids to bed.
Not really, no. They're pretty much in bed by the time we get home.
Yeah.
I go in and kiss. I'm sure you do, too.
Well, I don't kiss because I'm afraid of waking her up.
Yeah.
I literally, like, at night while she's sleeping in the dark room, will blow a kiss to her as if that's, you know, means anything.
That's sweet.
But it's really hard because I, you know, I think as an only parent, I really feel the responsibility of, like, taking her to school and putting her to bed. And that those are, like, the priorities in my day. So letting go of that, it's really hard.
I think that's a lot harder on you than it is on me. Because Jack's just with Adam.
Right.
It's just they're getting a lot of Jack daddy time.
Yeah.
You know, which he's fine with.
Right.
He does miss me, you know, but it's just it's not as big of a deal.
Right. It's a season of sacrifice.
It's a season
of sacrifice.
Well,
think of it that way.
Yes.
We're also not eating well.
No. I mean, we usually don't snack on anything bad at work at all.
At all.
And I am here to tell you, we have been taking down the chips.
The pirate's booty, the corn chips.
Yeah. Like, I never eat chips and salsa at work. Like, I do it at home all the time, but the office is like my place where I don't eat bad food.
Yeah.
And I haven't eaten. I mean, look, we have had worse eating on pilots.
Oh,
we're eating a million times better than we ever have before.
Yes. Yes.
But we're having our moments.
We sure are. We're also not responding to friends' emails.
No, we're not.
Like, we just this morning remembered that we got an email from our friend Nichelle, two or three weeks ago.
Never responded.
Sorry, Nichelle.
Yes. Not getting pedicures?
No, not at all.
Luckily, it's been cold here, so
yeah.
We don't have to wear sandals.
Sneakers and Uggs.
What else, Sarah?
Not meditating.
Oh, haven't even thought about meditating. That's not even, that doesn't even rise to the level of being on my list right
now. I know. What about you, Liz?
Okay, here's a pretty bad one. Showering. I have nearly given up showering. I mean, we had our story conference, which was a big deal, and I'm like, I have to take a shower and blow out my hair and blah, blah, blah. I showed up without having showered.
You looked fine. No one knew.
No one knew. There have been times when I'm like, when did I shower last? Like, I'm not even sure. So that's bad. I'm looking forward to getting back into my daily showering routine.
Just the basics. We are not socializing.
No. No. Socializing is out. We're socializing with each other.
I know. Thank God we're at least like friends in life.
Yeah.
It feels like sometimes we're socializing.
Yeah.
God, it's crazy. We'll socialize in May.
Maybe.
June.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Hopefully we'll socialize at an upfront party.
Exactly.
We're just not relaxing.
No.
You can't relax because even if you have a moment to relax, your mind is just going about the pilot.
Yeah. You
know?
You just shift to another thing that you have to stress about.
Yeah.
One thing that you have to stress about gets put away, and then another thing that you have to stress about moves in.
Yeah, which goes to not sleeping.
Yeah.
I dream only about the show.
You have to talk, you have to talk about your dream. Yeah, your work stress dream.
Yeah, my work. I was so stressed about work. I dreamed that our first AD, Terry, was like giving me a hug. Like, it's going to be okay.
He's a very calming
person. He's a
presence.
Very calm person. Yeah. That was my like dream, my dream pat on the back. And the same dream I was dreaming about wardrobe approvals.
Oh, God. That's the worst. Basically, all self-care has just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah.
With no sign of returning anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good.
No.
But we kind of knew this would happen. It always happens.
Yeah.
I do think at least we're doing better on the eating than we've done in the past.
Yeah.
So good for us.
We're starting from a much better place than we have in the past.
Yes.
So when we fall back, we're not falling back as far.
Yeah. So how are we going to treat ourselves when this pilot hell is done?
Wow.
Pilot hell that we wanted and are grateful for.
Right.
Love.
Yes, we're so thrilled to be not doing all of these
things. I know,
right? Like, that's the irony.
I know.
Okay, so I made reservations at the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa.
Mm.
I'm going to take Violet there for 4 days between shooting and editing.
That's good.
I'm going to, like, have just a moment at least of recovery before we go into editing. What about you?
I'm hoping during that same time, because we have just that tiny little window
yeah.
and that crosses over with Jack's spring break, too,
uh-huh.
to go to Palm Springs for a couple days.
Nice.
And we'll still, even there, we'll still be, like, doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't have to be in L.A. to do it. We can be reading scripts and, you know, because I'm sure we'll talk about this, but when you do a pilot, you end up meeting with writers in case you have to staff the show before you know if it's going to series. So
yeah.
we'll have that going on.
Yes. And what's nice about the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa, this is not an ad, but they have a kids camp.
Ah.
So I can sit by the pool, read scripts, and Violet can be in kid camp.
Perfect. And then, Sarah, once this is all done, we'll have to do an episode about getting back on track when you've gone off the rails once this is all done.
Yes. May, we'll go, yeah. June, July.
Yeah, we'll go to that spin class I keep telling
oh,
you.
Oh, God.
I
don't want to. Okay, next up, our new segment, Name That Hollywood Job. But first, a word from our sponsor.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
Sarah, now it's time for a new segment we call Name That Hollywood Job. Everybody knows about writers and directors and actors and publicists, but there are a lot of interesting or unusual jobs in Hollywood, and we're going to talk about them.
Yes, and for our first interesting Hollywood job, we corralled our friend Sherry Carnes. Sherry has been our friend for well over a decade, which is frightening. She gave us our very first primetime job when she was head of Kevin Williamson's production company. She's the coolest person ever. Idris Elba wanted to make out with her, and she didn't.
Claim to fame.
And she has a cool job. So, Sherry, thank you for coming in.
Yes, hi, thanks for
having Sherry. So before we get into a little bit more about your life, tell us, what is your job?
I am a story analyst for Warner Brothers Pictures, so the feature side of Warner Brothers. My job is to read books that haven't been published yet. I mean, some that have scripts that are coming in, whether it's for they want to know if they should buy it, whether or not it's a good writer and they should hire the writer. And then once something is actually bought by the studio, I'd be put on projects. So if there's a specific project, say Suicide Squad, I did not work on Suicide Squad, but I will read every draft that comes in and do notes sort of about what I think about the story, what works, what doesn't work. It is simply a platform for the studio executives to then read and bounce off of. They can ignore it. They can, you know, sometimes it's really helpful. I think they kind of come to know each person's voice and what material they like. So they'll start sending certain things to you or to, you know, to other people. But yeah, I read.
And is it called coverage? Is the so you read a book or a script and then you write a document that breaks down certain things?
Yes,
and
I
is
do.
Is that what's coverage? Is called coverage?
I do regular coverage, which is if it's being sent in to be bought. I do quality of writing coverage, which is obviously whether or not they should hire the writer. And then there's a project coverage, which is a much more in-depth analysis, and then you get into notes, actual notes about the story. And then there's project comparison coverage, which you do the latest draft and then the oldest draft, I guess, latest and newest, and mark out what's been changed in the story, how it affects the story, you know, and then the regular, you know, sort of analysis of the script.
One thing that's interesting to me about your job is, like, Sarah and I are, we go from job to job a lot. Like, we'll, you know, we're constantly in a state of flux, sort of not knowing what's around the corner. And your job is really like, I mean, you could stay there indefinitely. I mean, it's like you work for Warner Brothers, and it's more traditional in that
I
sense.
Just went to a retirement party for one of the other story analysts. He was there since 1989.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
And that's very not common in Hollywood.
No. But it's a union position. You have a pension and benefits, and then you're sort of protected by the union.
It's a really coveted job. There are not many people who have this job in Hollywood.
No, I went to a union meeting recently, and I think there's only 78 that are actually in that part of the section of the union. It's part of the Editors Guild. But they're starting to talk about, like, wanting to expand it and get, like, young blood because— I think when they hired me at Warner Brothers, it was the first time they'd hired in like 15 or 20 years.
Oh, my God.
Maybe it's 15, but
Wow.
And they hired two people. So it's like a little bit of like the unicorn job.
Yeah.
Like it's not splashy. It's not like you're not like, ooh, I'm a studio executive, which I've done. So, or not studio, but, you know, development. But it's I get to work from home.
Yeah. Well, and you love reading. So, a lot of what you're doing is reading novels, right?
I specifically ask for novels. I'd much rather read a novel than a script.
And let me ask you this question. Well, I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. But first one is, when you read a novel, like, what are you looking for?
One, the bones of the story, just like the structure of a story. Will it be able to be broken down into three acts?
Because movies are three acts.
Because movies are three acts, yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that comes in that's just so dense that you're like, sure, this could be something, but it's probably a television show or a limited series or, you know, so this is specifically, and it has to be a Warner Brothers movie. Like, so that in itself is a different standard from maybe like what Lion Gate, and not quality standard, just like a different, they make different types of movies.
Right. Have you had anything yet where you've read it and you're like, oh, my God, this could be a huge movie?
I just got put on a project, which I'm sure I can't say what the project is, but it's been in development, I think, for like 10 years. But a new writer came on, turned it in, and I was like, oh, my God, I love this.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I was super. It was Ed who retired. It was his project.
Oh, and you inherited it?
I inherited it, and I was like, thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks,
that's
Ed.
Fun.
Yeah.
So, Sherry, can you tell us a little bit about your career journey in Hollywood?
Sure. I'm on chapter 3 or version 3.0 of my career.
Which is a very common thing here.
Yes, it is.
I came out to be in development. I got a job at Warner Brothers, worked for a vice president there, and then went on to work for Brian Helgeland, who has won an Academy Award on L.A. Confidential. He's a great writer. He sort of really supported me. And I moved into development with Barry Mendel, who's done, like, Rushmore and Sixth Sense. And then I ran Kevin Williamson's company, which is where I met you two.
Yeah.
So that was version 1.0.
I remember our first meeting with you so clearly.
Yeah.
At Sunset Plaza.
Yeah. I read your Oz script and I was completely disturbed about you two. And then you show up and you're like,
Huh.
And they're like, they're from Kansas City. This is
like
weird.
Nice Midwestern girls.
Yeah, you think you had a priest get raped.
Yeah. I think we did, yes.
Page two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, she is way too cool to be our friend ever.
Oh, we were like oh my God. So intimidated by Sherry.
Not
true. It took a while to become friends because we were... Yeah, we gave you a wide berth.
We had a good staff. It was such a fun show. I mean, it didn't
last. It was a show called Glory Days. It was on the back when there was a WB. It was on the WB.
Went the Dancing Frog.
Oh my God! Wow.
Sorry.
So anyway, you were at Kevin Williamson's company.
Yeah, that was version 1.0. Then my dad died, and I had a complete, like, you know, revelation of, like, am I doing what I want to be doing? Yeah. He always said, you should be a writer. I decided, you know what, I'm going to be a writer, partly because I was in the room a lot for you guys from Glory Days, and I loved it, like, breaking down the story and doing everything. So I started writing, and I wrote a novel that then got me, and then and two specs, but then I got hired... I Liz and Sarah.
That's right. The Image Mary Club. Yes.
Full circle, people.
You gave us our first primetime job. We gave you your first primetime job.
Which was very fun. It's way too short.
Well, that show, the strike, the 2007 Writers Guild strike, really hurt that show.
Yeah. Because right now, we'd be killing in the ratings.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
So sad.
I know.
So sad. It really is.
So then... Version 3.0 comes because I got very sick, and for a long time I didn't know what was wrong with me. I almost died, and then it was like
a couple times.
Yeah, and then it was 3 years of, okay, now we kind of know what you have, but we really don't know how to treat you. So it was a long time of me not being able to work probably a 9-to-5, or especially in a writer's room. Like, I just didn't have the energy or the ability to sort of concentrate and do that. So I started, I have friends who work in production or in development also, obviously, from version 1.0. And they offered me, they're like, come read for us. They're like, you can do it at home. You can do it from your bed if you're not feeling well. You know, it's just, and we need your help. So do it. So I started doing it for them, which then led into another company I read for. I just sort of added in, because it's all freelance in the beginning. And that's how you get started as a story analyst. It's literally just kind of amassing, like, a roster of people that you read for. And then it rolled into where I'm at, which was pure luck. Pure luck.
And skill.
Yes.
Well, I think
you're damn good at it.
Yeah, I can do my job. I know I believe in that I know what I'm doing. But the way the job came to me was such, like, a... And I'm not like this person, but it was so the universe just being like, here, you've had a rough go of it. Here's like this gift. Mm-hmm. And it's a gift that I don't know 10 years ago I would have seen it for how great it is.
Mm-hmm. We talked to Marissa Tancheron, with whom you are also good friends.
She's the best person ever.
Yes. About working in Hollywood, working anywhere really, and having a chronic illness.
Yeah.
You have a job that... you know, really works with, like, the life that you need.
Yes. Yeah.
But how do you balance those two things?
Sometimes well, sometimes not at all well. Mm-hmm. You know, Marissa's my hero because she somehow manages to, like, do it all and just keep a smile on her face.
For people who might not have heard the episode, Marissa is the creator or co-creator of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and she has lupus.
Yeah, she has lupus, which I have an autoimmune disease also. It's as with autoimmune, because there's so many different variances and like little different, they don't really know the exact version of autoimmune, but I'm treated almost as if I have lupus. I have to take the same medication. But for the first 3 years when I was figuring out, you know, medications and how everything, like, could function, it was impossible. I mean, it was really hard. Like, and the lucky thing about what I was doing was I could do it as freelance. So if there was a day where you're just like, I can't work, then I had that choice. Of course, I didn't have health insurance and I didn't have, you know, it wasn't great money, but it was money. Yeah, I mean, there's weeks where you feel like complete and utter crap, whether it's like joint pain or just mental fog and trying to figure that out. I can kind of now know when it's coming. A lot of it has to do, like, you need to exercise. You need to sort of keep your body going. But then there are days where you're like, I can't. Like, it just, it kills too much. But you get into a cycle. But if I then push myself because it's just who I am, and then if I do that for a couple of days, all of a sudden it's like my entire energy has been, like, taken out of me and I'm completely wiped. And then you just sort of have to go, okay, wait, I have a really big week this week. Like, I got to get to bed at a certain time. I have to, you know, I really want to go out to dinner with friends tonight. But if I do, there's no version of being able to, like, work, not because I went out and got drunk, just because, like, physically, like, I won't be able to do it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, it's a journey because, like, every week it's different and, yeah, you just sort of, you have to watch what you eat. I don't know. It's fine.
Well, watching you as someone who's sort of watched you go through this whole thing, it does feel like you've gotten to a place where you're sort of, you know, more at peace with it.
So much more.
And that you have managed to incorporate it into your life in a way that obviously you don't like, but you're still loving life, thriving.
When you look great. Your life is in balance. Like, this job really allows you to keep your life in balance.
Yeah, it's 9 to 6.
The interesting thing to me about hearing your story, you know, your three acts, is for everybody, not just in Hollywood, it really shows how you don't know what is going to lead to what. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, your job now you have because of Act One.
Yeah.
Because of the people you knew 20 years ago.
For sure.
So it's like no matter what business you're in, you really just don't have an idea of what's around the corner and doing something. You don't know what you're doing now, what it could lead to.
Oh, my God.
It may be something totally unexpected.
Yeah. I mean, most of the jobs that have come have all been through people I know. I mean, it's not like the cool, like, hot job, like, I'm an executive, but there's so much more things that are better about it. Like, you don't have that sort of, like, overwhelming pressure to deliver. You're just sort of taking the material and being able to look at it from just an outsider's perspective of does this feel like a movie to me?
What I love is that it's really all about the story. It's kind of pure in that way, you know? It's just, tell us about the story. Does the story work? Mm-hmm. Can we turn this into something?
Yeah, no.
And people really have to trust your evaluation.
Yes, yes. And then it's hopefully they do trust my evaluation.
Well, I hope they trust your evaluation because I know how fucking smart you are.
So. That's right. They should trust your evaluation.
I've said dude 3 times, people.
Sherry, before we let you go, is there, after your, you know, many experiences here in Hollywood, is there anything in particular that makes you happier in Hollywood?
My friends. I mean, the group of people that I have, like, sort of found in this world. Like, I have the best friends. And that, that's like, goes, nice. Like, there's such a big group of, like, of women who do support each other, of neurotics like Bill Krebs. Bill Krebs, who was on the show, who's amazing. But it's just, I think that, like, I'm so happy I came to Hollywood because I have, like, this great, I do have a great life of great people. So that's it. I think it's the people.
Good. Well, I like you spreading the message that not everyone in Hollywood is like a shark. there are many nice Midwesterners like the three of us.
Exactly.
Out here.
Bill Krebs also.
Yes.
Yeah. He's from Michigan.
That's right.
You can have real friends in Hollywood.
Can.
You
That's
heard
right.
it here first.
Yeah.
Sherry, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Sherry.
Next up, hits and bombs, but first an ad break.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
And now it's time for hits and bombs because Hollywood is all about big hits and big bombs.
I don't have a hit. So it's been rough. But Mary had a hit. So I want to give Mary a hit. We unexpectedly had to work on the weekend. And, you know, I, as an only parent, I have to really plan ahead for childcare. Yes. And it was kind of a last minute thing. And I could not find anyone. Mm. And Mary, I mean, just like I sent her a text and 15 seconds later, she was like, yes, I can babysit.
Aww.
So I just really want to thank Mary for jumping in and watching Violet so we could get together and work. Violet had a great time also.
Well,
by
Mary,
the way.
Who wouldn't have a great time?
I know, with Mary. Exactly. Violet was thrilled. And so anyway, Mary, thank you.
Mary
huge hit.
Stepped up.
Yes.
Sarah, my bomb this week was I had just like a massive anxiety attack in front of Jack while driving. Basically, it was I had to get him to school early for his second grade play, which is like the biggest event of the year, which is why I was going, because I haven't been doing anything at his school. Right. But this is like the one non-negotiable event you have to be at,
yes,
right,
yes,
of the year.
Yes.
And I'm just like vibrating, you know, at a different level these days.
Yeah.
So I had to get him to school early. So right as we leave, I find out there is a horrible accident on the 101 with a fatality, and the 101 is closed.
Yeah.
So now I have to take surface streets to school, and so everybody else is taking surface streets. And I guess I couldn't get into the school once I finally got there because it was like all the clogged arteries. Uh-huh. And I called my friend Amanda, who you know, Amanda. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Luckily, she's a very sweet person.
Yes.
But I was just like, I can't get in. I can't get in. Like screaming. Jack is in the back seat. Oh. I was like, I even yelled, fuck. I mean, which I never swear in front of him. I really don't.
Yeah.
I lost it. Yeah. And I'm sure it's all the stress.
Yes.
Came out. You know, I'm stressed about being on time anyway.
I
hate to be late.
Yeah.
And I felt like a mom fail. It was the one time I was taking him to school, in weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was going to have him late to the school play. Oh. Now, as Amanda kept telling me, and Adam kept telling me, because I also was calling Adam freaking out, is that everybody was late.
Right.
Because it was a horrible accident that totally messed with LA traffic.
Yeah.
And I should have just been like, hey, something awful has happened. There's been this accident. It affects the morning. Let's stay calm. Jack, we'll get there in time. I'm sure they won't start the play without you.
Right.
But that's not what I chose to do. I chose to start screaming insanely. Aww. So, boo Liz.
That's just, it's just a symptom of this particular week.
Yeah, so things happen.
We move on.
We move on.
Jack will recover.
He will. He didn't even care.
He probably loved it. He was probably like, ooh, mom said fuck.
I know.
All right. Well, neither of us has a hit this week, but maybe our show will be a hit.
Yes, that's right.
That would be nice.
All right, Sarah, it's time for this week's Hollywood hack. This week's hack comes from our pilot director, Larissa Kondracki, and it's The Lucky Cat.
Yes.
We need it right now because we want some luck to get our pilot picked up.
Mm-hmm.
The Lucky Cat, or Maneki Neko, is a common Japanese figurine which is often believed to bring good luck to the owner.
Yes. And when we first interviewed Larissa, we interviewed her over Skype, and she was in her home office and we were in LA. And when we talked about, like, please come do this pilot with us, I noticed one behind her on the computer screen. I was like, oh, she has a big lucky cat, which you have also at your house.
Yes, in my kitchen.
Yeah. And little did we know that the lucky cat is like her thing.
Oh, she loves herself. Some lucky cats.
She showed up and suddenly there are lucky cats in the transpo vans. There are lucky cats in the windowsill of our office. There are lucky cats in the production office. Like,
yes.
Everyone has a lucky cat.
And I have to say, I think our pilot is going to be amazing. So they're working.
Just based on the lucky cat.
Yeah.
So.
And a little bit of Larissa's talent, too.
I mean, there's that.
You know.
There's that. So thank you, Larissa. Thank you, Lucky Cat. And that is it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. Email us or send us a voice memo at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe if you haven't already.
Thanks to our producer, Jennifer Lai. Also, thanks to Kristen Meinzer and Andy Bowers of Panoply. Thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at sfain, and Liz is at lizcraft. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join in on the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Liz Craft.
And I'm Sarah Fain. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Liz, did I tell you I also ordered us a money frog?
No.
It's so gaudy, but I figure, you know.
Hey, if we have a lucky cat, why not have a money frog?
Whatever works.